people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want to just go all the way to the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go down Fairs another tier, and about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
An MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard.
There's too many people. I want them to go away. Even though they think they're so free.
Too Many People could also be a motto for It's Casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native L.A. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
I want my driver's license back.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The 605, the 101, the 101, the 101, the I-10, the 210, the 605, the 101, the 405, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The red light.
Good afternoon and welcome to the 60th episode of Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host and producer, Edward Solis, and gracing the studios this afternoon are two guests from the MTA, Dave Sotero and Jose Ubaldo. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for coming in. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, very exciting. There's a lot to talk about. And being that our format caters geographically to each area and city of LA County and showing people how to visit the destinations within those cities car-free, I figured to commemorate the 60th episode, what better than to have people from headquarters, HQ. So I wanted to get into it here. You know, I've noticed a huge increase in bicycling and more people bicycling and more people on the streets and getting on and off the red line, gold line, blue line, etc., and the bus. Now, Dave, tell me, you yourself bicycle.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to be able to talk the talk and walk the walk. I didn't want to promote something that I wasn't willing to do myself.
Wow.
So just to get to work, I bicycled with a bus line, and then the bus line takes me to the Metrolink station. So that's how I'm able to incorporate the three different modes into my commute. It's worked out very well. Save a lot of money.
Right. And you're probably able to, like, you know, get some work done on your phone while you're on the Metrolink, et cetera.
Yeah. And I usually work on my iPad, working on emails as I'm coming in on the train.
Absolutely. So you take that Metrolink into Union Station, I take it.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, as far as, you know, using your experience with bicycling within your commute as a catalyst to promote a cycling-friendly campaign with the MTA, you know, one thing I wanted to discuss with you was the fact that each bus facilitates two bikes at a time, I believe. But apparently there's a possibility that a third bike may be facilitated per bus. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've had discussions with the bike community over the years, and they had suggested that Metro introduce a three bike rack onto the buses. And we were looking at legislative ways in which we could facilitate that. And it's basically the California Vehicle Code that limits the ability to put a triple rack on an ordinary transit bus that goes through short intersections where the turning radius could be a problem. I don't know that we're going to be able to introduce a triple rack anytime soon, but there are other things that we can do to make bicycling more friendly for people that are going to be using bikes to connect with the system.
Sure.
We have the racks, we have the lockers at the stations, so it's very easy to leave your bike there and jump on transit at that point.
Right. Now, just to cap off on the triple bike rack situation on each bus, is it a possibility that it may happen, or is it not going to happen?
Well, as I said, we have to work with the California Vehicle Code and enable that to be changed, and that's not the easiest thing.
Right.
So it's just a matter of continuing to work on it. I don't know of any immediate plans to introduce that, but it shouldn't be an impediment for people that want to use their bikes in Metro. There's certainly, you know, a couple years ago, we removed the peak hour restriction on the red line and the purple line. So you don't need to worry about the peak hour to stay off the system at
sure.
that point.
And a lot of personal advice I've given to friends and family and professional peers that have chosen to take the bus more often with a bike. One obstacle was, you know, a bus coming and there's two bikes already on there, so they have to wait. But what I told them was, that's one issue that they brought up. I said, well, these days the times tables are running very frequently, so it's not that much of a wait. You know what I mean? As more people cycle, it seems like there's a lot more of a supply when there's more buses coming through, so the wait's not that long for the next bus.
Yeah,
right, Jose?
Well, here's the thing. The people want to get to their destinations one way or another right now, like that, just right now. And they don't understand that the bus is the system, how it works, is head weights, and the peak hours for the buses is between 8 to 10 minutes, which is really fast.
That's fabulous.
And the train system is even faster, 3 to 5 minutes, and the blue line and red line. So the trains are coming one after another. You miss one train, don't worry.
Exactly.
It's coming the next one.
Exactly.
So you can get it.
And a lot of first-time public transportation users that have come to me for advice, I say, you know what, you don't even need a schedule for the peak hours.
Yes.
I just say, don't confuse yourself.
Yeah.
If that's where you need to go, just take this here to point A to point B. if you see, you're on a platform and you see a train leaving, there'll be another one in 5 minutes.
Yeah, don't run after the train.
Right.
We don't want accidents.
Right, exactly. Now, as far as the actual ridership on the MTA with bicycles, I mean, have you noticed a huge spike, Dave?
We've noticed additional cyclists using the system. The exact number, it's hard to tell.
Sure.
But there's just been a groundswell of enthusiasm for bicycling in LA for a number of reasons. The former mayor had a lot to do with that. We've tried to be as bike friendly as we can. We have new signage, and we have places, designated areas where you board the trains for, you know, safely getting people on and off the trains with bikes and just regular people. So, you know, there's been a lot of interest, and, you know, just with the in the future, we're going to continue to be bike friendly and make improvements where we can.
Very cool.
Yeah, we had like we removed seats on the cars on the red line.
Yeah,
and also we assigned space on the light red cars, like the Gold Line or the Expo Line, where we recommend to the people who bulky items or bicycles move to the middle of the cars, so the people can go in and out easily and for the ride wherever they go.
You know what's really amazing too is that because of the Red Line and Green Line infrastructure and both lines being bike friendly, I've seen a lot of just positive activity being a MTA user myself, such as families getting on the Red Line at North Hollywood. And, you know, I have a studio out there, so I'll take that Red Line all the way to Union Station and get on the Gold Line. So, you know, strike up conversation, and you see a mother and father and two kids on a weekend, and they're from the Valley, and they park their car there, and they're taking a ride with their bikes, and then actually, you know, getting on the Gold Line to go cycle through East Los Angeles just to see something new, to venture out. And a lot of people I see are starting to venture out more and, you know, cover new territory, whether it's for exercise or just to immerse themselves in culture. I mean, it seems like you guys are really attaching yourselves to putting the arts and culture word out there too through public transportation. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, on our website, we have a lot of content that shows people what they can do on the weekends with it, maybe getting a discount to the destination by using your Metro Pass. So there's just a lot of fun stuff to do on weekends, and bringing your bike along is always a great way to get there.
And we are publishing right now a series of postings where we recommend activities in certain lines. You go on the Gold Line, you can go to Pasadena, and all the destinations that you can find in each of the stations. So you go to Del Mar Station, Del Mar Station gets you close to Colorado Boulevard, or Highland Park Station. What is in Highland Park? It's a neighborhood
Southwest
up
Museum.
And coming.
Right.
It's getting new life. It's coming alive, the neighborhood. So you can go and visit those places.
Right. Highland Park is thriving. I mean, I did a Highland Park episode with a woman, and she has a place called the Glass Studio where they actually make glass. And she does all kinds of different artistic workshops. But there's also the Southwest Museum, you know, and there's skate parks for people who want to come from different areas. I mean, so there's plenty to do. But back on the bicycling topic, I've noticed that the bike lane campaign that you guys made, it was really bold.
Yes.
As stated before the show. Now, everything takes work. I understand that. Nothing comes easy. But have you guys noticed just more of the cyclists as a community taking more outings together that include public transportation? Because I've seen things like an evening when I'm not sure what it's called, but you see all the bicyclists on the street, hundreds of them. And I think it's some sort of trip they do that's weekly. And I don't know what the organization is called, but I got... took a Red Line with them one time, and it was just filled up with all these cyclists, and I think they do it monthly.
Sounds like you're talking about the Midnight Riders.
That's what it is.
Yeah, those are very large rides. Metro is one of our missions with the bikes is to promote safety. So everybody has seen the Every Lane is a Bike Lane campaign. That was an effort to get motorists to be safe. But we also have rides that were partnering with Cycle. It's an organization in Pasadena. And they do rides that incorporate public transit. And you can look on the website and find rides that you can participate in. They're really fun. I went to the very first one went to Dodger Stadium.
Okay. So
we had a big group of cyclists that met at Union Station. And we went to Dodgers and we met Tommy Lasorda. It was a great time.
That's fantastic. Now, as far as putting something together for the skateboarders, you think you're ever going to do that? Is that possible?
Well, as long as you don't ride your skateboard on the station platforms,
yeah,
feel free to bring them along.
Use the beautiful architecture as a skate obstacle, right? We don't want that because then it starts to chip.
No, when skateboarders escaping from their where they are riding, it can cause a lot of trouble, accidents, hit someone on the leg. So, no, we don't want that to happen.
Right, right. Now, let's move on to the I-405 project. You know, I'm really intrigued because this has been going on for quite some time. And Dave Sotero, I wanted to ask you, the whole catalyst for this to happen, I mean, what was the actual catalyst for this project to take place?
Well, if you look at the 405, you're able to use a carpool lane on the southbound 405 from the valley down to Orange County. And when you look at the northbound side of the 405, there's a big gap in West LA between the 10 and the 101 where the carpool lane does not yet exist. So that was really the main impetus for this particular project. It was a Caltrans project. They did all the environmental work for it, and then Metro inherited that project when we obtained federal funding for building it. So we're managing the project, we're working with Caltrans, but it's really to fix that 10-mile gap in the network between the 10 and the 101.
And widen the lanes, obviously.
We're going to standardize the width of the remaining lanes of traffic so you don't have this weaving in and out of lanes, which is a safety risk if you're traveling on the northbound 405. So those will be standardized.
Right. There's a lot of positivity to this whole project. I mean, for one, once the carpool lanes are installed and in place, you know, that's going to be a catalyst and create, you know, an opportunity for people to ride share.
Right.
And, you know, just like cycling and, you know, the subway culture that we have, I just think that that's like another revolution that's churning right now is the ride share programs. There's a lot of people taking it amongst themselves to organize their own groups on Facebook and get very proactive and you know, that are committed to being organized enough where they put time into it, and you could tell. And I just think that this is going to be another opportunity for people to ride share along that route. What do you think?
Right. The completion of this 10-mile segment is going to create a great incentive to continue your journey on the carpool lane from the two counties, Orange County to LA County. So it's important that you have a streamlined freeway network that will make the ride share trip as efficient as possible, as quickly as possible. So just to give you an idea, for every lane of carpool lane that is built, a rideshare vehicle saves about a minute of time. So just in this 10-mile segment, you're saving 10 minutes a day in the morning, and you know, you already have it in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, when you're going to work, that matters.
It really does.
I mean, people, you know, when they think 10 minutes, what, you know, a minute, a mile, what's that? But the reality is, I mean, yeah. You know, the freeways are not so nice. But I mean, you know, I mean, Jose, I mean, it seems like once this foundation is built with the 405 and it's completed, there's going to be not only the ride share, but there's just going to be more opportunity to do more.
Yeah, well, it's more complex. That the beginning of the project was the construction of the HOV lane. But in order to do that, the project became more complex because you had to widen the lanes. In order to do that, you had to remove the bridge. In order to do removing the bridge, you had to almost rebuild the bridge because they were too old. Also, at the same time, the ramps, on and off ramps. So it becomes a huge, huge project. Little by little, we're moving forward. We hope to finish next year, as we already told everybody. But the benefits are little by little coming for the residents of the area.
So how many more Carmageddons do we have?
Well, fortunately, no more Carmageddons. And as of tomorrow, when we close the very last Wilshire ramp, we're not going to have any more so-called ramp jam or rampture. That was the name given to the closures associated with the Wilshire interchange.
Yeah, there's four different intersections, I believe, right? Or off-ramps.
There's, I think there's eight ramps at Wilshire alone. And each one of those had to be reconstructed in some way in order to build a higher capacity. So the good news, you know, tomorrow we close down the eastbound Wilshire ramp to northbound 405.
That's fantastic.
That's a three-month closure, but after that, we're done, no more.
Very good news. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to do the second segment, and we'll be back.
This is Ignacio Salcido from La Mascota The Bakery in Boyle Heights. You're listening to LA Nista and SkidRowStudios.com.
This episode of Los Angeles Nista is brought to you by La Mascota Bakery, a family-owned business serving the community since 1952. Tamales and sweetbread, made the old-fashioned way daily.
yourself.
Life.
Welcome back to this 60th episode of Los Angeles Nista. I'm Eddie Solis, and my in-studio guests, direct from the MTA, Dave Sotero and Jose Ubaldo. How are you, gentlemen?
Pretty good. Great. Thank you for the invitation.
I have a question for Jose. You know, last time you were here, the Dodgers were not hot.
No, definitely not.
They're in first place, and they're very hot. And I myself and a lot of people have Dodger fever. Uh-huh. So
I wonder why.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not a bandwagon jumper, but it just feels nice to win and to win by, you know, a huge winning streak and so forth. You know, so let's talk Dodgers shuttle. A lot of people are not aware of it, but a lot are. And I wanted to ask you, now tell us about the backstory of that. Is that something that the Dodgers have stepped up to provide?
No, it's part of the grant they will receive from the AQND to provide the service. Listen to the public, and they were complaining that the bus take too long to get from Union Station to the stadium. So we reviewed the program. We saw that we can improve. We did the changes, and now we had a bus lane bus lane only for the buses that goes faster from Union Station to the Dodger Stadium.
Yeah, what I've noticed was the previous years, you know, it was a nice service. You could take the red line or the gold line anywhere to Union Station, walk to Vignes, and show them your ticket, you get a free ride to the stadium. It was very convenient and a nice gesture. But this year, I've done it three times. I went to three games, and I was floored that it seems like there's more shuttles leaving. There's more frequent. I'm not sure if that's an actual thing, or am I making that up? Are there more shuttles?
No, that's the same, but they go and come back faster.
Yeah, because of that reason, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and the lane was coned off.
Yes.
And there was actually a police escort into the lane.
Yeah, we had a motorcycle officer from the sheriff department. They escort the buses, so they move faster, which is what everybody wants.
Right. And if you were to drive, you'd be stuck on Sunset Boulevard when you go up the hill. Give them your money, your hard-earned money, and then figure out parking and then walk across the entire parking lot versus being pulled up right behind the center field fence.
At the door.
The door, really. A minute walk, if that.
Yes.
To the gate. So that itself is really admirable and convenient. And I think just that alone is a huge positive for people that want to experience a game with no pressure whatsoever. Yeah. It just makes it very enjoyable. And I've shared that experience with different walks of life, and everyone gets the same like pleasure out of it. So that's really cool.
I just want to add the City of Los Angeles Department of Transportation is participating in this effort to make the extra lane or the special lane for the buses and this season. And we hope to have next year because it's working really good.
Yeah, and let's talk about the big concert in Los Angeles this Saturday night called the FYFS at the LA State Historic Park, which is right off the Chinatown
station.
Stop. Yeah, and for the goal line. You guys, in conjunction with the promoter, you guys are extending the goal line hours.
Yes, we've been working in the past with the promoter, and it's working really good for both sides.
Fantastic.
We provide the service. They are happy that they don't have traffic problems. The public can get into the venue faster and leave also faster when the concert is finished. The extended hours for the goal line is not only for the goal line, but for the entire system. So nobody missed any connections to the blue, to Expo, to Green Line, or the Orange Line in the by San Fernando Valley.
Well done. And Dave, I got a question for you. So it seems like we did find a solution for the bike riders that will, be taking public transportation. Although there is a rack limit of two bikes per bus, if you had a folding bike, you could carry it on. And I've seen that in the past two decades I've taken public transportation. I've seen, especially the last 4 years, folding bikes. Now, you yourself can speak from experience because you're a fan and a collector of folding bikes.
Yeah, I mean, it's a solution. It doesn't solve all the problems, but for transit, you can't beat it because I've been at bus stops where I've seen that the racks were already full. And the only way I was able to catch my train connection using that bus was to fold up my bike and bring it inside the bus and go to the train station that way. It's a really good, and people think, you know, folding bikes, they're they're too expensive or they don't do what I need it to do. But you won't have problems if you're incorporating biking with transit if you use a folding bike. I swear by them. I think they're great.
Yeah, and as far as just to branch off and talk about your enthusiasm for them, I find them very fascinating because it's definitely work smarter, not harder. I mean, they get you where you need to go, and you don't have to lug it in a full in its full form, but you could fold it up and take it with you. What do you think as far as those becoming more accessible to people? Do all the bike shops have them? Is it really that common?
I think you have to ask for it. You have to look for where these bikes are sold. The biggest manufacturer is Dahan, and so they have a lot of models available at bike shops. You can go lower cost. You could go higher cost. It just depends on what budget you want. But, you know, a folding bike with 16-inch tires or at maximum 20-inch tires, they work best on all of the different transit modes that you can think of, both the buses, the light rail trains, as well as the heavy rail subway cars.
Very well done. And one thing I wanted to ask you guys before you leave is the change that I've seen with Metrolink, and I know it's two different entities, but you guys ever work with them on projects? Because they have that weekend pass now. It was unlimited for $10 for an entire weekend, and it just seemed like all of a sudden they got really flexible with the enthusiasm of public transportation and being that, you know, Union Station is the hub of Los Angeles, that maybe they were, you know, taking some sort of direction from you guys or maybe collaborating on some ideas. But tell me about it. I mean, are you guys aware of the new?
Well, I know they recently made the transition to the tap card program.
As well.
So when you purchase a paper pass with Metrolink, the electronic chip is embedded in that card. So especially at Union Station, it makes it easier for people that are coming off the Metrolink trains to get onto the Metro Red Line and Purple Line. But, you know, I think they have their own promotional program to encourage ridership. I thought the $10 weekend pass was a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of people that lived way out from Laverne and places that far out texting me saying, with this and the $5 day pass that the MTA provides, I'm going for it.
Yeah.
And these are people that teach at Cal State Fullerton. These are people that work at Capitol Records, different walks of life, people that, you know, from all areas that are very enthusiastic to take public transportation. And when they heard about that, because, you know, the Metrolink runs all the way out there, right? Mm-hmm. And then they were like, well, I'm going to be coming in, you know, to Union Station, and then I could just go from there. So it just seemed like, you know, if they were on the fence, that was a component that helped them go on this side of the fence. And
right. And don't forget, they introduced the bike cars also. So they have a train car. The bottom level is dedicated for bicyclists that want to get on board. And especially on the weekend with the discounted pass, you can go to the beach and take your bike with you. So it's very attractive.
You can go from downtown to San Clemente to ride your bike along the beach. It's a beautiful
excursion. It's very beautiful, yeah.
And cheap.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One thing I want to ask you guys about, is there anything that's in place between now and the end of the year with the MTA? Any new promotions you want to talk about? Is there anything that that you guys could talk about that's new and exciting? As far as any campaigns regarding going to events or extended hours on any of the lines or new lines?
I'm not aware of what's planned for promotions. And we're not opening any new services this year.
Mm-hmm.
We have several or a couple projects that are in pre-construction now that'll be, you know, they need to be built. But for this year, Jose, do you want to?
Yeah. Next year is going to be very exciting. Not this year, next year. We're going to begin three of the major transit projects in the United States. And they are right here. Crenshaw LAX line, the subway, and the regional connector. Those are huge projects. We hope to begin with Crenshaw at spring, and Subway after that, and the regional connector, and that will make a difference that definitely will change the landscape of the city. Those are the major things that we have right now. And finish the 4-5.
Right. Well, okay, guys, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. We're going to take another break and welcome the Mural Conservancy of Los Angeles. They're on their way in. But thank you. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.
This is Ignacio Salcido from La Mascota Bakery in Boyle Heights. You're listening to LA Nista and SkidRowStudios.com.
This episode of Los Angeles Nista is brought to you by La Mascota Bakery, a family-owned business serving the community since 1952. Tamales and sweetbread, made the old-fashioned way daily. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the 60th episode of Los Angeles Nisa. I'm your host and producer, Eddie Solis, and you're listening to SkidRowStudios.com. I wanted to thank the gentlemen of the MTA, Dave Sotero and Jose Ubaldo, for coming in and joining us today for our 60th episode. Now, into the second segment, the MCLA, the Mural Conservancy of Los Angeles. My friend, Isabel Rojas Williams, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So good to see you.
Great to see you again. And thank you for inviting us.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've been following you on Facebook and in the news and on different blogs. Mm-hmm. And you guys have so much going on. There's a lot going down next week. But before we go into that, you brought
a surprise for
a
you.
A very big surprise.
Yes.
A very, very big surprise. I never met this gentleman, and I'm very happy to be in his presence. His name is Ken Twitchell. And can you guys tell me, before we get into what's happening next week with the city council and so forth, how you guys came together to collaborate on the MCLA?
Well, we met when Isabel was, you were still a graduate student, or you were a teacher at Cal State Los Angeles?
Both.
Yeah.
But also from before, when my son went to LAXA and you had been an artist in residence at Los Angeles County School for the Arts. I think that's when I hear about you the first time.
That's right. And you were doing a major project at Cal State Los Angeles on the murals of Los Angeles.
Exactly.
And one of your students or
friends.
One of your friends, yes, had chosen me as one of their subjects.
Exactly.
And then we had a panel discussion at Cal State LA, which was extremely well attended.
Wow. And what year was this?
2009-2010.
Okay.
We began the project in 2009, and in January of 2010, we had an exhibition called Walls of Passions, The Murals of Los Angeles. And so 14 MA students took different muralists from the city, and Kent was one of them, and he was also a panelist in our exhibition at Cal State LA, and we had over 700 people attending.
Wow.
And Cervantes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fernando
Cervantes was the student that used me as a subject. And he had gone, I had painted a mural back, my first L.A. mural in 1971. I had painted Steve McQueen on a house in downtown Los Angeles. And it had been up for, I don't know, 30 years or something, and then 40 years, and then had been painted out mysteriously.
Now, in what area of downtown Los Angeles?
This is in the Pico Union district. It's right in the corner of Union and 12th.
Before there was any L.A. Live.
Yeah.
On a single residence.
Wow. It was on a single residence, which is interesting. And it was just so well received. I was getting interviews from all over the world after I painted. I thought I was the next Andy Warhol. You know, I mean, I just thought, whoa, this is incredible. Of course, mostly probably it was because it was Steve McQueen, not because it was my mural. But I had chosen wisely. But then it was mysteriously painted out, 30 years later or something. And everyone just assumed this rumor that I had painted on a house that was owned by a Korean family who were friends of mine at Cal State LA. Rebecca Yoon, she was in the art department there. And so she said, why don't you paint on my old house? So I did. And then her parents had moved, and another Korean family I had heard had bought it from Korea, didn't speak the language. I didn't want to go there and make an issue because, you know, they didn't know. And that was the rumor for years and years. And then Fernando went up to the house and knocked on the door, first one that had ever done that. And they weren't Koreans at all. They were from Mexico. And they were very disheartened that someone had accidentally painted out. And so thanks to your friend,
right,
we restored it.
Wonderful. So we restored our mural, and it came back to life in 2011, right?
Yes, and it's been there ever since. It's there now, and it looks beautiful.
Now let's stop right there, because what you guys just created was a story in itself, meaning that, for instance, what you did on the home or what Chris Brown did, there is actually laws in place, correct?
Mm-hmm, there.
Now let's talk about that. Are you allowed to paint on your own house an actual mural, or can you have someone painting.
Well, you ask me right now, you're not, because there is no mirror ordinance. At this point, you could. There's not a mirror ordinance in order. The new mirror ordinance is going to say that murals are not allowed in single property if they pass version B. There are two versions to the mirror ordinance, A and B. But, you know, since we have a mirror moratorium since 2002, it'd be legal to paint anywhere in Los Angeles, whether it's single residence or not.
Your residence, anything.
Anything.
Like Willie Herron has said, that in Hancock Park or West LA or wherever, if you want to put beautiful borders around your home, decorative painting around your home, that will be illegal. You will be arrested for that.
That's
what they're passing.
Well, you know, see, this is the thing. Is that, like, you talk about the First and the Fifth Amendment, freedom of expression and freedom of speech. It's a very difficult issue.
I'm actually speechless.
Yes.
To hear this, you know, after it resonates with me, that you could, it's illegal to create beautiful art.
Exactly.
is what the problem is.
Right. So what I'm saying right now is that we have the dark age of muralism for 11 years because the mural moratorium. And then now, you know, you have these further issues that are going to curtail the freedom of the artist, which is a very difficult thing. That's why we are supporting version A of the mural ordinance.
Sure. Now, as far as the politics behind all this, we'll get into that in a little while, but I want to, like, inform everyone about the backstory of you two, Ken here, and the MCLA. Now, Ken, have you been based in Los Angeles since 71?
Yeah, I came here. I went to East LA College in 66, where I met Judith Hernandez, whom I consider to be one of the greatest artists.
And there was a whole revolution happening in East Los Angeles at that time, seemed like.
Yeah. Judith and I were friends on campus there, and she was like a child prodigy. She was only about 17 or 18 when I met her, and she could draw so well. She was like Rembrandt walking around that campus already. And but then I didn't paint my first mural until 1971, where I actually signed it. We were doing hippie things, you know, on houses and sidewalks and things, of course, in the 60s. But it was after, really, the Fine Art Squad, the LA Fine Art Squad, had begun doing staggering pieces, like Venice in the Snow. And on Vic Henderson's studio in 69, he had painted the Brook Street painting.
Okay.
And those were the things that really set a lot of us off, because these things were like, they belonged to museums, but they were just out there on homes and on buildings. That really started the mural movement all over the country.
Do you think during that time at East LA College, just more or less in the community there, and that trickled down into art and music, you know, sociology, do you think that there was an energy happening in that area and that spawned a lot of creativity? Or is it all over Los Angeles?
Well, I think that what was happening at East LA College was happening all over. It was the hippie movement. It was that orientation.
And it was resonating in different ways.
Yes, in different ways in South Central Los Angeles, mm-hmm. with the... Roderick and Roswell Sykes in St. Elmo's Village, the Alonzo Davis and the Brockman Galleries, and
Ulysses Jenkins was doing the music and the murals.
Yes, and
the videos.
And Judy Baca was off doing her pieces at that time in Venice, a little bit later, but still pretty much right around in that same time.
Right. Can you tell me, as far as moving on to the 80s and 90s, when it seemed like there was a spike in street art, graffiti, I think the bystander that has no interest in each gets it confused in a way. Am I right? Does it seem like because fine art that you guys create, the mural is on the street, they think it's connected to graffiti?
Well, that happened when graffiti used to be vandalism. It isn't anymore, but there's a difference. There was something about the freedom and the sort of anti-tyranny of being able to go out and do what you wanted to about graffiti that attracted other artists who began using spray paint to do beautiful, actual, quite exquisite murals. And they liked to call themselves graffiti artists. So that was really kind of confusing to the citizen that there was a difference between now what began to be in the late 80s and in the 90s as graffiti art. Wasn't tagging, it wasn't vandalism anymore, it was something, another form of really muralism.
Sure.
But at first, to answer your first question, yes, it's a very good point. Tagging began to be, for the first time, also vandalism, and tagging began to be painted on murals. And what the public began seeing, say in the late 80s and then into the 90s, was murals that were covered with tagging. And it began to be homogenized. We're busy people. We're trying to make a living. You look at a mural, all of a sudden you're not seeing this oasis of beauty anymore as you did in the 70s. Suddenly you're seeing a piece of art that's covered with ugly scrolls of spray paint.
Sure.
And so that began to be homogenized in the mind as something ugly. And people such as I were known as people who were doing things that were ugly because of that.
Right. It's just kind of a guilty by association.
That's right.
Factor.
That's a guilt by association.
And that's a universal thing.
Sure.
It happens in any industry.
Absolutely.
You know, so Isabel, let's talk about the restorations that you guys have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I've attended a few and
yes,
it's a great, great experience. What do you guys have on the horizon as far as restoring existing murals? Is there anything coming up that you would like to inform
yes,
everyone about?
As you know, our most monumental restorations are right now on the 101 freeway, and we're very proud that Willy Heron, who I brought here
sure.
before, is our commission restorer. And he is a fantastic artist, musician, you know,
absolutely.
From the 60s on. So we're very proud to have him at MCLA helping us with this. So we hope by summer of 2014 to have restored the great majority of the murals that were painted in 1984 for the Olympics. Next year is the 30th anniversary of the Olympic Games, so we hope to have that. But MCLA concerns itself with the community murals as well. We just finished 4 restorations in San Fernando Valley. We have restored 3 in Bull Heights. You attended those.
Sure.
And at Estrada Courts in Bull Heights, we restored 2, and there are 2 more that we clean and protected. We restore murals in Mid-City, and we'll continue to do that. Right now, we are in conversations to do fundraisers to restore more murals at Estrada Courts in Bull Heights.
Right. So the next unveiling of a new restoration is when?
Well, we hope that this restoration will take about 4 months, and we'll immediately, meanwhile, you know, every restoration, it takes us about a year from the time I work very much behind the scenes about the fundraisers.
Absolutely. Connecting a lot of administrative work.
Yes, connecting with the original artists and asking them for pro bono supervision, like we did with Frank Romero, Glenn Avila. Ken Twitchell was our first pioneer in this monumental project. And so he set an example for the others. So we are very grateful. So we hope by 2014 we'll be done with that and we'll continue in the communities.
That's fantastic. Now, from experience, I've attended an unveiling in Boyle Heights of a mural restoration. And if people, you know, want to get involved and participate in one, I mean, it's really exciting to see people come together and acknowledge the work that's been done, the time and energy, the creativity and the patience of the MCLA and commitment. So if, you know, the next one you hear about, you know, I'll definitely put it out and hopefully it'll resonate with people and they go see for themselves. And I think it's just something that's admirable, you know.
Thank you. One thing
I want to ask you is how do people get involved to help out the MCLA? Is there any way, do you guys have ongoing fundraising or take donations, anything
yes,
like that?
We do take donations. Our website is mirrorconservancy.org. And we do have fundraisers, we do have mixers, and we invite everybody to help us to becoming a member. Gives you 1 year of free events, which includes lectures, workshops, and mural tours throughout Greater LA. And in the mixers, you have the opportunity to meet artists such as Ken Twitchell, Glenna Avila, Willie Heron, Frank Romero, you know, and we had great advisors in our among our directors. Chish Marine and mm-hmm. Natasha Marine are our advisors. But I also want to clarify that many people are under the impression that we are supported by the city or by the state. We are a very small nonprofit organization, and we hardly have any money. So we really do rely on the generosity of the public at large to come and give us $5, $20, whatever is possible, so we can continue to bring back our cultural history.
Very interesting. Ken, question for you. How do you think or know that when it comes to murals in a major city, how does L.A. different? Yes, different than New York or Chicago? I mean, what's the climate out there?
I think like Terry Schoonhoven, who was one of the founding members of the Los Angeles Fine Arts Squad, it was just something that was raging in the streets in the 60s and 70s, and it was just a natural thing. It began something that in which L.A. influenced the whole world, like New Orleans is to jazz, mm-hmm. Los Angeles is to murals.
It really is rooted here.
It was rooted here, and in fact, the biggest mural program in the world right now is in Philadelphia because Jane Golden is there. But Jane Golden started here. Jane Golden started here. She started her reputation here. She was painting murals around Los Angeles starting in the mid 70s, and then became ill, moved back to the East Coast, got well, went to Philadelphia, and now the Philadelphia Mural Arts program is the biggest thing in the world. And it's because of Jane Golden, who really started here. In fact, she was my apprentice when I painted the Ed Ruscha mural back in 1978, between 78 and 79. She was my apprentice there. Now she is heading the largest mural program in the world.
Wow, that's fantastic.
She started here in
LA. You must be proud of her.
I'm very proud of her, very proud of her. And she's a great human being, great person. But yeah, Los Angeles is the weather. We have it all year round. There's a certain type of individuality that is in Los Angeles.
Sure.
Creative people come here from all over the world, always have. It's the dream. And there's something about Los Angeles, too, that is unique. I remember talking to Ed Ruscha, who was one of our greats, about Los Angeles. He came here from Oklahoma. People come here from all over. And there's something about those of us who love L.A. And L.A. you don't have a rep here. You grow up in the East, you have a rep. You do something wrong, you have a rep for life, good or bad, but especially bad. But you come here and you can do something wrong again and again and again. Look at the movie industry.
Right.
Terrible movie, again and again. And all of a sudden you go out and you do a good movie and they love you. We're so forgiving.
Athlete, you could be in a slump for 4 years.
That's right.
And then all of it, you're a bum for 4 years.
You're a bum.
You're the hero of the
That's
town.
That's right. They love to forgive. This is the most forgiving city. That's why people, creative people, who are the most vulnerable people in the world, can come here and be safe.
Very, very insightful quote there. I love that. Now,
I just wanted to mention something that maybe Ken can talk about. He just created a fantastic mural in Cleveland, and talking about the weather, you know, and the music, because he loves music, so maybe you tell him about it.
Cleveland, of course, is where rock and roll began.
Right.
And then it moved to New York and on, but Cleveland is where the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is.
Sure.
And my son, 21-year-old son Artie, and I went to Cleveland and did a mural. I painted Ruby Dee, the great black character actress from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, on the side of a 40-foot building in Cleveland. And the weather, I mean, I wasn't used to the weather. And this is summer. We would be up there painting, and all of a sudden, it would start hailing on us. Big, you know, marbles dropping our head. We had to run around again into shelter, and then it would get cold and windy.
That's summer.
Yeah, in the summer. and then we would come out, and it would be too hot to work. The sun would just be blazing on us.
Wow.
It was, like, amazing. I had to stay an extra week just because of the weather and the storms. And I'd forgotten. I grew up in that part. I grew up in Michigan, so that's sort of the
vicinity.
Yeah, very much so. But Cleveland's a beautiful city. I was very, very, very happy.
Did you visit the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I did, yes.
What did you think?
Well, incredible. In fact, I did a mural, Isabel knows, of Michael Jackson, and I worked for 3 years on a project for him that was going to go right across from the Grauman's Chinese Theater back in 1993. It was supposed to go up. I met him in 1990, and between 90 and 93, Michael and I worked together on this project. It was a 10-story mural. And I've often thought the best place for that to be might be one of two places. Well, one of three places now. Somebody has recommended Las Vegas, but it never got up because of the scandal that hit, which is probably a big shock to begin with. But it destroyed him and at the time, and so the mural went into hiding.
Wow.
But I still have the mural in my studio, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame would be one place to put it somewhere in Cleveland because of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or in somewhere in the San Fernando Valley because that's where Michael lived and that's where his family lives
now. Encino, right?
Encino would be perfect. And there are a couple of buildings we're looking at there.
What was the backstory of you working with Michael on this? Did he come to you?
He went to the Hollywood Arts Council and asked them to contact me. And I'm one of those people.
What year was this? I'm sorry.
This was 1990. And I'm not one of those people who has enough discipline to just do something for the money. I have to really be behind something I do in order to get up in the morning and have the incentive to work, because it's just too much work.
Sure.
And so I had turned down jobs, and the Hollywood Arts Council, the Arslanians, whom I had known for many years, knew that I had turned down a lot of jobs because I couldn't do the people, not because they were bad people, I just didn't have an incentive to do them. And so I had turned down six figures, I think about 4 different times.
Wow.
I just don't have the discipline. And so they were reluctant to tell me who it was. And they finally told me it's Michael Jackson. I said, absolutely. The guy's a genius. I love him. And Michael and I got together, and he took me over to his ranch, and we spent a whole day at his ranch, just the two of us. We got to know each other. The nicest guy in the world, the most down-to-earth, unpretentious, truly creative people I've ever met.
And that's, you know, you're the third person I've met that had a one-on-one story with Michael, and all have said the same thing.
Yeah.
Personable, warm, very kind.
He took me into one room. He took me all through his home on the ranch in Santa Barbara. In one room, he had just for all of his awards. He didn't have them hanging on any walls. They were all stacked up. No one could see them. He took me in there just sort of, I just grin, you know, and said, here's all my awards. And there were thousands of awards everywhere in this one little room about the size of your studio here, which is not that small, but I mean,
so they weren't really displayed?
No.
Like showing off, just kind of storing them?
Nowhere in the house.
Wow.
He was a modest.
That's pretty selfless.
Yeah, he was. He saw himself. He was really a performance artist as well as a great, great composer and musician, and arranger. But he was a performance artist. He saw himself as a modern-day P.T. Barnum. Wow. He loved P.T. Barnum. He loved the way P.T. Barnum made life so much more exciting for everyone.
So he was a huge P.T. Barnum buff.
Yes,
wow,
he was.
I had no idea.
I didn't either.
Wow. So when you guys talked about the vision of the mural, how long did that take? Like the pre production of it before he actually did it?
Initially, he was working on the Bad album, and he wanted it, or he had just released it, I can't remember. He was maybe working on the Dangerous album, too, during that time. But he wanted it, or maybe some people around him wanted him to be all in leather and studs and silver and chains and stuff. And I said, you know, Michael, on that building, I see you more as the the white,
with the fedora,
and the white outfit with the blue band around his arm, and what was the name of that character from a previous album? It was after Billie Jean. It was
I can't remember.
Oh gosh, it's right.
I mean, after the Thriller record.
After the Thriller.
Yeah.
It was the next one where he was all in white. It reminded me of Fred Astaire or Cary Grant. It was old Hollywood. It was 30s Hollywood look. I'll think of it. And I said, that's how I see you. On that wall, this is old Hollywood. He said, absolutely, you're right. That's how it must be. And I painted him in that smooth criminal.
That's right.
Smooth criminal outfit. And it was perfect for Hollywood. And we had to go, in fact, to Sacramento. to get it through them, because this was an historical building, which is now the Disney Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. And we had to go to the Department of Interior in Washington, D.C. And I made a presentation to them, and everyone agreed that this would be a beautiful, perfect piece to paint on that building. And it was being respectful to all of the historical ornamentation of the building. We didn't cross over any of it. I carefully posed him so that his shoulder and his arm and his hat and everything missed a central medallion that was on the building. And it was very respectful to
the building. Very strategic.
Yes, and Michael liked that part of it too.
You had to tell, you know, Eddie, that Kent took hundreds of photos. So I've seen part of the documentation. It's amazing, all this incredible collection of photos that Kent took of this, and to see the mural.
Wow.
This is why it's so important. And you asked earlier, how do we meet and how did I come to work for MCLA? But because when I learn about artists such as Kent, it's a passion that I have for the murals, because I see what they've done for our cultural history. I see how murals such as Kent Twitchell, you know, are so important for defining ourselves as who we are, you know. And we had a conversation earlier with Kent about the importance of murals and how, you know, it's the first expression of art that any kid will see before going to an art institution, and how they really define us culturally. And we talk about this, Kent, about, you know, it's so incredible, authentic to see those monumental pieces. And I was talking to Kent. I know that when he began painting, we didn't have any mirror ordinance. Neither they worry about it. They just found the walls and they were given the commissions. Most of the time they paint for free. But times are different, and how important it is for us to help protect their rights, to help protect our history, mirror history. And, you know, and it's incredible, something that I need for you to know, that the mural community has come together, all of us. You know, I'm not MCLA, we're one of many organizations that have united to present our plea to the council members to help us to pass this mural ordinance and to protect artists such as Kent, that are really, and he'll hate what I'm going to say, but legendary and iconic muralists such as Kent. You know, we can't afford to lose more murals because they're not grandfathered in, because they're not protected by anybody. So it is so important that we have an ordinance in place so we can protect our cultural legacy for generations to come, and to help artists, not only, you know, the traditional muralists that began painting in the late 60s, but today's artists, everybody, you know, together, all the mural community together, to help each other.
Very well put. And I think, you know, that message and backstory just carries a lot of historicals and positive light, and why it's important in the city for murals to be a component to children as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this day and age, let's be honest, there's not a fine art gallery around every corner.
Exactly.
But when people see murals, hopefully that's a catalyst for them to get inspired and create and learn that you can create, whether it's through murals, music, or anything else.
Exactly.
But that's the main thing, is that it's
to empower.
Yeah, empower. And it's completely positive to constantly be forward, moving forward, thinking and creating. That's a form of therapy for a lot of people, especially in inner cities. Not everyone has an outlet to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great message.
Which is a great point, because what we really don't want to see is City Hall pass a blanket rule that governs the inner city, that governs East LA, that governs Venice, places where there is more freedom and more artists, just because they don't want to have what they envision as some ugly house next to them. Now all of a sudden you cannot paint your house in East LA. If East LA wants to have freedom, let East LA have freedom. And if Hancock Park doesn't want freedom, well then let them vote not to have freedom. But don't cover the whole city. This is a very diverse city.
Absolutely.
So opt in and opt out should be, you know, the alternative. We can't just have a blanket decision for the whole city.
Right. Now let's talk about this upcoming city council meeting, why it's so important to the MCLA. And it was on record, it was going to be this Friday, but it got moved.
Right. For Wednesday, let's clarify this, that the mirror ordinance that it was supposed to go for vote this Friday has been rescheduled by City Council for Wednesday, the 28th at 10 a.m. in room 340. This is the second time that this has been rescheduled in the last week.
Yeah. Now there's a lot at stake, though, it seems like, right? I mean, I read into it. They're going to be voting.
Right.
Right there at the meeting. I mean, what can you do between now and then?
Well, we've been loving 24/7 forever. We've been helping write the mirror ordinance along with the mirror community to get to this point. And, you know, at the beginning, we knew that the most important part it was to lift the 2002 mirror moratorium. And as we move forward, we were finding out more and more issues that were important to address because the muralists are not protected and we need to protect their rights, you know, and their artworks. And you ask why it's important for MCLA? Well, as I said, we've been loving 24/7, talking to all the council members, not one time, but more than once, and to find support to lift the mirror moratorium and to find support to help us protect the artworks and the muralists and their copyrights and all that. But we also want to move forward. Our mission is to restore, preserve, maintain, and document the murals of Los Angeles, and we are concerned with the artist's right as well. So we've been so busy with this mirror ordinance, and once that's done, we can go back and focus on what we do. We want the muralists, such as Ken Twitchell, to keep on creating wonderful murals in our city so we can regain our title as a mural capital of the world again. And we will concern ourselves with documenting the murals, restoring the murals that need to be restored, and to document for future generations so we can go back to our mission to help the artists that way.
So you want to be done with this, you can move forward.
Yes.
And continue your
yes.
mission statement.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. You know, it just seems like people are able to get savvier with information because of the internet and so forth. And as artists, you guys have to protect yourselves through, you know, trademark, stuff like that. Do you guys find that it's risky to see your stuff, put yourself out there and hope ideas don't get taken? Does that ever cross your mind? Or is it pretty much always a work in progress?
Well, it depends on the artist, of course. Artists are individualists. For me, when I put a piece out there, it's public. And if it's going to end up in a movie or something, well, that's great. I mean, it's just like it's on a building. I don't want to censor the building because I put a piece of work on it. That doesn't seem right.
Sure.
You know, and if it's going to be in an ad or something where there's a money-making thing, then it would be nice if they would come to me and maybe share. If they don't, okay. You know, I'm not going to make a big fuss over it, but it would be nice if they did. I don't really care. I had to put a stop to a couple times when Honda first came to this country. They had one of their people had photographed a Honda Civic, which was the first time they had come here, in front of my Steve McQueen mural and my Strother Martin murals.
Oh, wow.
That I didn't like, even though they were beautiful. Oh, I just thought this was great. But I paint people. I did not want to associate those two people with anybody. It wouldn't be fair. And so I had to go to them, and I finally had to get Steve McQueen's lawyer to call them.
Wow.
And put a stop to it, because that just wasn't fair.
So, and your approach is, it's just all about being fair.
Yeah.
If things make sense, then so be it.
Yeah. Live and let live, you know.
Right, right. Not so rigid, more of an intuitive approach.
Exactly. Each piece as it is.
As far as where people could find you online, can you give your website name?
Yes, it's mirrorconservancy.org, and they can actually go to our Facebook, Mural Conservancy of Los Angeles. We're very active. Everything that we do, you know, is posted in the minute that happens. So we have an incredible active Facebook page. And so whatever we are doing, any event, restoration, people can find that there. And our images are free to scholars, students, to writers, and to for educators, which is so important to me, because when I studied muralism, I couldn't find all this wealth of images for my own studying. I had to do my own research, and that's how I became, you know, some kind of an expert on the matter, because I really needed to find, you know, go to the sites, find the artists and interview them, you know, the primary sources. But now we have that MCLA as a gift to our community.
Very well done. Now, what about your next mixer? Do you guys have anything scheduled?
We are planning, and this is, you know, we're actually talking about the dates. We're planning to have a mixer at Chish Marin's home. As I told you earlier, he is our advisor along with his wife, Natasha. And so we're hoping that the dates are going to agree with everybody's schedules. Everybody's very busy, you know, particularly now that hopefully the mural ordinance passes. There are many artists that are waiting, and part of our directors, for these to pass, to move forward with our lives.
Right.
So we're trying to figure out a date, but hopefully that's going to happen. But we're also planning to have a gathering after the mural ordinance passes at the Far Bar.
Little Tokyo.
Yes. So right after the mural ordinance, we will go there, and he's going to be wonderful and give us all happy hour prices early in the day. And so hopefully this is going to happen on Wednesday. I'm going to have to call them again, because twice we had postponed.
Right. And of course, that's not you're doing. It's
nothing to do with us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just seems like, you know, in a way, moving it to the middle of the week gives a little more time to speak about it more. Is there any other appearances you guys are going to be? Will you guys be on any be anywhere else that people could hear you and find you?
Well, we had scheduled Kent. They asked me from Channel 4, NBC 4, to have Kent on Wednesday. I'm sorry, Friday, after the mayor ordinance.
Uh-huh.
Right after that, he was supposed to be interviewed in front of his Steve McQueen. But I'm going to have to change that. And we were interviewed today by Los Angeles Times and Telemundo. And we were on Channel 4 yesterday as well. John Cady's Climac interviewed.
Very well done.
Different people, Raul Gonzalez, right. Robert Vargas, and myself.
Yeah, I would love to find links and help share them so people could, you know, hear the show and everything else you guys are doing and reinforce it with in any way I can. Anything else you want to leave the people with before we go?
I think Ken should be the last one to speak, but I just wanted to say how important it is that people know that we are together in this. We are a mural community, united and powerful, together about the same issue, you know, passing a mural ordinance that is going to protect the rights of the artist. And that's what I would like for the council members to know, that it is about time to put an end to the dark age of muralism in Los Angeles that has denied the right of artists to create legally for almost 11 years.
Right,
and we should all bookmark muralconservancy.org to keep up every day with what the latest thing is, because Isabel can't call 1,000 people.
Sure.
But we can all... And I do myself. I check it, you know, 2 or 3 times a day to see what is going on right now.
Updated.
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Here in the now. Well, yeah, with that being said, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Eddie. This is wonderful. Thank you
for inviting
me. We appreciate
it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks.